You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by the MLB.com Shop.
Hi, this is Phil Rogers, MLB.com Extras, National League Central Edition. Thank goodness Tampa's opened in Arizona and Florida. A lot of us are getting sunburned, and it didn't take long. Cardinals keeping a close eye on Adam Wainwright. Pirates very excited about Jung Ho Kang. Some big things going on in all the camps, and everybody happy to get started. As always, joined with Jen Langosch. Jen, I know that Florida sun must feel good after a Midwest winter.
Absolutely. I won't brag that it's, you know, high 80s this week. The sunshine came out. It was funny. We actually got down here last week to the coldest cold snap they've had down in Florida this winter. But it was brief, and so as we see the snow and cold temperatures back home, it's certainly nice to be in the sunshine.
Yeah, nice to have those 80s. It sets it up. Maybe we'll have a nice warm winter. I think it was kind of cold throughout Florida last year, so we're due to have a nice one.
I hope so. It was certainly, you know, this week with camp getting underway, first full squad workout on Wednesday, the weather certainly suggests that baseball's ready to start. So keep our fingers crossed that it stays that way for the next 5-6 weeks.
Absolutely. And, you know, as sure as baseball starts to be played, there's no moratorium on injuries and things that scare teams from the start. And the Cardinals sure seem to get one of those on Tuesday of this week when Adam Wainwright left camp to go get his an abdominal injury checked in St. Louis. Jen, what was the mood in camp when it was known that Wainwright was going to have to go get checked out?
Yeah, I mean, certainly there didn't seem to be a sense of panic just yet, and that's really just because the Cardinals are still working to determine the severity of this. I mean, I think that the good news in all of this, real good news, is it has nothing to do with his arm, you know, and as we came into camp, a lot of the discussion was, you know, how would Adam Wainwright's elbow be after he had that cleanup procedure in the offseason, and how would his arm respond just to the workload that he's carried the last 2 years? I mean, this is a guy who's thrown just under 520 innings over the last two seasons, by far the most of any pitcher in the major league. So, you know, all those concerns about his arm, I think, kind of lead to just taking a sigh of relief that just this is just something to do with the abdominal area. You know, that being said, the Cardinals still have to determine exactly what the injury is, and then from there, how you treat it, you know, and if it could affect Wainwright's spring program. I think the other thing working in his favor right now, assuming that the severity isn't too bad, Wainwright was already going to have an abbreviated spring program. That was one of the things that the Cardinals intentionally designed to address the workload concerns. So, you know, he was going to throw less than other pitchers. He was likely going to make one fewer Grapefruit League start than he normally would have. So the fact that he was going to do less over the next 6 weeks, at this point, again, really no reason to panic in Cardinals camp. So I know anytime Adam Wainwright's name is mentioned with any sort of injury, and particularly with the need to be sent back to St. Louis, obviously St. Louis collectively holds its breath to find out a little bit more.
Well, I know Wainwright aside, we talked on our earlier podcasts in the offseason about the pitching depth, which was thinned out a little bit with the Hayward trade and no really significant pitcher, it wouldn't seem, or starting pitcher brought in from the outside, Carlos Martinez moving from the bullpen. What kind of a feel do you have, you know, a week into pitchers arriving and throwing, just for the depth of the rotation and the possibility that, you know, there still might be a move to be made, a pitcher to be added at some point?
Yeah, I think the thing that's really been encouraging to the Cardinals over this first week has been Jaime Garcia. I mean, he's a guy that was kind of forgotten to some extent, not really talked about all this winter when the Cardinals talked about their pitching depth and their options for that fifth rotation spot. You know, usually went something like Carlos Martinez, Marco Gonzalez, oh, and maybe Jaime Garcia. I mean, it was just the Cardinals were at the point where they couldn't really have a lot of expectation for what Garcia could do just because of how much he's been off the field the last 2 years. You know, that being said, Jaime came into camp healthy. He's throwing. He's actually a little ahead of schedule just from pushing himself this winter and really wanting to prove that not only is he healthy, but he's also ready to be back in this rotation. So that's a pitcher. Again, the Cardinals didn't really have a lot of expectation for him just because they knew they couldn't count on him. But anything that they could possibly get from him would be a bonus and, again, gives them a little more depth. I think the other positive thing thus far, Michael Wacha very healthy through his first live BP session on Wednesday, which went real well. So he's really encouraged by where his shoulder is at this point, doesn't seem to think that's going to be a concern. So, you know, some of the question marks that we had coming into camp, obviously Wainwright is still one of them with this latest issue, but it looks like the rest of the starting pitchers are very much on track, again, with the bonus of having Garcia now back in that mix.
Well, one of the great fun things, and I know you jump out there as much as anybody at these early parts of camp, is getting out and watching guys throw on the mound. Sometimes guys you've only seen their names in a farm report, or sometimes non-roster guys that come to camp and just kind of figured out who is this guy, what does he feature as a pitcher. Who have been the guys that have kind of caught people's eyes in this first week of camp?
Yeah, I mean, one guy who's caught everybody's eye has been Jordan Walden, who came over from Atlanta. Not so much because he's surprised with anything he's done, but just the funky delivery that he has, and to kind of see it in person, you know, takes you aback a little bit. Also enjoyed a few days ago, there was a bullpen session where Jordan Walden and Sam Tuivalala and Trevor Rosenthal lined up next to each other, 1, 2, 3, all three guys who can hit 100 on the radar gun. So, you know, that for us was a very enjoyable bullpen to watch. But, you know, with the Cardinals just having gotten started with live BP sessions, we haven't seen, haven't had a lot of opportunity to see how these pitchers play against hitters and kind of see them test in that regard. So certainly something I'm looking forward to seeing more as spring goes on. I mean, you do think back to some of the revelations at this time in spring. I mean, 2 years ago, this is when Michael Wacha started to open eyes when he started facing hitters, and all of a sudden the Cardinals saw that change up in the downward plane that he had and really, again, kind of put himself on the radar. So you're right. This is always a time when new pitchers emerge and kind of catch your eye. So certainly something to look out on for the next couple weeks.
Hey, this guy isn't a pitcher, and he's probably a real outsider for the major league roster. But it's just a number I saw this winter that jumped out at me. Ed Easley, former draft choice of the Diamondbacks, high pick in with the Cardinals now, threw out 42% of runners at AAA. It doesn't seem like you see that very often. What's the deal with Ed? Just sort of a depth guy in the organization, or does that ability to control a running game kind of give him some consideration?
Yeah, right now he's viewed as a depth guy and probably somebody who's going to start the year in AAA. You know, the Cardinals did think highly enough of Easley to want to add him to the 40-man roster this winter and protect him, so certainly that speaks to kind of his ability. You know, this is a tough organization to be a catcher in when you have a guy like Yadier Molina who's clearly established himself and going to be here and probably until he can no longer catch, period. So, you know, the Cardinals have actually had a tough time finding backup options just because, again, it's not a place where other catchers necessarily want to sign when they know that Yadi's going to catch 130, 135 games a year. So they have tried organizationally to acquire a little bit of depth. Easley is a part of that, and having him there certainly gives the Cardinals a little bit of protection in case something were needed at the major league level. Right now, you know, I wouldn't expect anybody but Tony Cruz to start the year as the backup catcher, but certainly it's an interesting group of catchers, some young catchers here in camp. You know, Carson Kelly comes to mind as a guy with very high upside and then Easley in the mix with some others that just provide some protection in case there is a need at the major league level later this year.
And still speaking about catchers, you mentioned Yadier, but I understand there's a second Molina that's been spending quite a bit of time in camp too, his brother Jose. What's up with that?
Yeah, you can never have too many Molinas, the Cardinals like to say. You know, 2 years ago they had Benji Molina come in as an assistant hitting coach. He stayed for a year, and this year it's Jose Molina who's in camp. You know, the Cardinals really look at Jose as a guy that they would like to find a long-term fit for in this organization. Since Mike Matheny took over as manager, this organization hasn't really had a roping catching instructor in the minor leagues, and it's a position they would like to fill and one that they think Jose could be a perfect fit for. You know, at this point, Right now, Jose is just here to help. He is scheduled to have knee surgery in March and is going to rehab from that, and actually told me earlier this week that he's not necessarily going to retire just yet. So I think he wants to see how his knee is able to respond after the surgery and if there's any hope for maybe another year in uniform. But, you know, certainly when that time comes, whether it's in the next year or even a little bit later, he's a guy the Cardinals have their eye on as somebody who can maybe be an instructor in this organization. And right now, Jose is just enjoying being in camp. I think Yadi said as much that he was worried about his brother being at home in spring and just not going to spring training like he has for so many years. So he issued the invitation. He got the Cardinals' permission. And certainly I think the Cardinals' catchers can learn a ton from having both Molinas around throughout the spring training.
Absolutely. And before I let you go, I should ask about pitchers, but the position players, the hitters that reported, anything you've written or maybe something that just caught your attention that you'll write later, anybody showing up with any kind of a beard when they didn't have one, different look, different physical, anything just kind of catch your eye when the guys got to camp?
Yeah, I mean, the one that will really catch your eye is actually Yadi. He came into camp about 15 to 20 pounds thinner, really took to a nutritional program this winter and then also just working out. And, you know, for him, as he gets older, he realizes that he needs to be durable. He needs to be a little more agile behind the plate. So that was his way of kind of addressing that. So he'll certainly catch your eye as you see him walking around. Looks a little different than we've ever seen him coming into spring. Otherwise, not too much, you know, different across the board with the hitters. As you mentioned, you know, we haven't seen very much of them to this point, but no real big changes that have been noticed really so far.
Well, I know if there's anything going on, you'll be on top of it. Jen, thank you very much. As always, joined by Tom Singer, who's been, I think, laying by the pool in Bradenton, a nice warm spring to get started. How you doing, Tom?
I'm doing good. You're kind of close. No pool, but it was nice enough. When I tried to play a little basketball today, got a sweat on, so it's all good. But no pool, no.
How's your jumper? Are you like me? You got to get an offensive rebound to touch the ball.
No, it's pretty good. You know, I mean, if you put somebody on me, it would be tougher, but my shooting percentage is pretty good. I can sink them.
Okay, sounds good. I can usually shoot about 40% on layups. That was my game. While we're talking about Bradenton, new digs there. The Pirates have reworked the clubhouse. And can you take us for a little oral tour? How's it looking?
Well, it's tremendous. Frank Quinley, their club president, referred to the facilities as the last man standing because they've had a lot of improvements at PNC Park. And also at Pirate City, the workout facility. But McKechnie Field was the last thing that they attacked, and they did a wonderful job. The locker room facilities are about twice as big as they were previously, and they've added a lot of areas that simply weren't existent last year, such as a coach's locker room, which they didn't even have, a meeting room, the extra media workspace, which, you know, previously we didn't have. And basically, it's the state of the art. Bradenton Marauders, the Florida State League team that uses McKechnie Field in the summer, will have absolutely the best Class A clubhouse in history when they move in.
Well, I can't wait to see it. I'm going to be in Florida in March, and I'm going to throw a plug in. I just love McKechnie. It's one stadium that's still like they all were when you and I started covering spring training, but they've done a nice job, you know, getting it, keeping it modern, keeping it viable. And I just love it because it's not a, you know, these new parks are nice, but, you know, there's a sameness to them, or it's just big, bigger, biggest, and I like the throwback. So,
McKechnie's it's a wonderful blend of the old and the new because the ballpark itself, the infrastructure has remained unchanged, but then you have all these modern additions ringing it, and it's a wonderful blend of different eras.
Yeah, I love that the right field deck where I'm sure you're always hard at work, but right after the games, sometimes they'll have singers out there playing and pouring some different cold drinks. It's a nice spot.
You mean they have cold drinks out there while we're working?
No, not working. Not while we're working. Absolutely not.
No. I mean, we don't have it, but people are drinking while we're working, huh? That's good to
know.
Yeah,
other people do, Tom. I think people do.
Oh, wow.
But now looking at your looking at the Pirates team, your guy AJ Burnett. What did he look the same when he showed up? It looks like he never left.
That's correct. I would think he's in a better mood mentally. We'll see how it plays out, but the fact that he's committed this season to be his last basically has freed his mind from any burdens, and he's just geared up to enjoy his final season, obviously be productive. But I think you can tell the way he's carrying himself and dealing with people that he's committed to making this season just in the ball. Hopefully it'll be performance-wise, he'll be also stellar. But I mean, he's definitely a man on a mission, and his mission is to go out on a high.
One great thing about these early spring training workouts, pitchers that are throwing, and you hear the sound of the mitts and the bullpen. Sounds like everybody's throwing 105 miles an hour. The catchers and the coaches, who are they buzzing about? Which pitchers have caught their eyes early in camp?
Well, no real surprise there. I mean, they do have a bunch of hard throwers, especially in the bullpen and in the bullpen candidates. This latest guy they picked up, Kevin Arrow, has lit up some eyes. You know, he's got the reputation of being able to hit triple digits. And I don't think they have a gun on anybody, certainly not this early. But it sounds like he's definitely getting it up to 100 miles an hour. Tyler Glasnow, number one prospect in the organization, in camp as a non-roster invitee, will probably start the season in Double A. Has looked terrific in his bullpen. Jameson Taillon, coming back from the Tommy John surgery of about 11 months ago. He's on a slightly slower schedule. He doesn't throw as often as the other pitchers, but when he is throwing, he looks terrific. There's every hope that he'll be able to start the season on schedule in the minors. They'll bring him along, and we may see him in the middle of the season.
Well, and the guy that's probably been creating the biggest national buzz out of there, and I'm sure locally too, the guy Jungho Kang on the field, and got a couple of questions for you with Kang, but just generally, what are your impressions as you've now seen him in a uniform and working out?
Well, the first impression is that physically he breaks the mold of the way we perceive players from the from Asia. Well, I mean, that's not really true. I mean, obviously, because he's very stocky, he's very muscular. Chu, obviously with the Rangers, is also a big guy. But, Gang looks like that he can definitely rip the ball. He's got muscles. And he's very fluid defensively. Obviously, we've just seen him in workouts. But making turning the double play, covering on bunt plays, he's very agile, very smooth, nothing mechanical about him, which is always a good thing to see about an infielder that you haven't seen before. He could be the real deal.
Yeah, I was interested. Clint Hurdle put it well the other day, as he often does, about talking about how Kang, unlike all the other players, was carrying a whole country with him, that all of Korea watching to see how he makes the transition. And what about the Korean media contingent? How big is that, and just how much does that kind of change the feel of camp?
Well, there's about a dozen and a half of them covering Gang, and they really bought into the whole pirate thing. I was watching a television lady interview some of the other pirates, and she was decked out in full pirate regalia, including a hook on her hand with the pirate head and everything. So I think it's safe to say that this may not have been something they had in mind when they did sign Gang, but the Pirates, without question, are the most popular major league team in Korea right now. And they basically, besides signing Gang, they signed up for a huge international following. This whole development could have major ramifications.
And what are the odds that with the Pirates, it turns out Kang has already been to Bradenton and trained there?
Yes. His Korean team, Nexon, held preseason practice there through 2010 before moving over to Surprise, Arizona. And Gang does remember being here. He doesn't remember enjoying it as much as he is now because he was a rookie, he said, and although he didn't use the word hazing, I imagine he makes it sound like that the veterans on the Nexon team had him running around, running errands for them the whole time he was here. So he didn't really get to enjoy the baseball aspects of Pirates City the way he's enjoying it now. But yeah, his whole pro career began in Bradenton with Nexon, and he entered his next chapter, same place.
Yeah, well, I can't wait to get a little bit further into spring training and see him facing pitchers from other teams, see exactly what the Pirates have with him. As few players as interesting as him this spring, I think. Tom, thanks very much. As always, joined with the chronically sunburned Adam McKelvey, new and fresh into Arizona after a winter's cold, frosty Milwaukee weather. So, Adam, welcome to the sunshine.
Yeah, it's nice. My vitamin D level has been restored to normal.
Absolutely. And, you know, just remember that SPF 75 and 175.
Why are you calling me sunburned, Phil? Are you calling me pasty?
Well, you, like me, will be okay as men from the Midwest. Spring training fully underway now. It's official. Ryan Braun in camp, as our colleague Tracy Ringlesby wrote the other day. As the Brewers go, so goes Ryan Braun. The two are joined together. And from the start of camp, what's your take on Ryan Braun? Haven't talked to him. I know spirits are high. What do you think as we head to 2015?
Well, it's, you know, this is the time where things are going to get tested. And he's been saying that all along. It's been cautious optimism since he had the procedure to basically numb the nerve that was giving him trouble in his right hand all last season, really the last two seasons. It feels good. He is basically without restrictions. They're going to limit his extra hitting. But he's a guy who doesn't do a lot of extra hitting anyway, so that's not going to be a big change. But as he and everyone else has said, the test is going to be, can he withstand the grind of spring training? It's one thing to occasionally hit during the offseason, off a tee or soft toss, things like that. Now he's going to start to see some live pitching. He's going to start to take BP every single day. And the grind of this is going to be the big test. So it's optimism, but it remains cautious optimism. The good news is there have been no setbacks since he had this procedure. It's been all good, and he says he feels 100% and that he is confident that if he's healthy, he's going to be 2011-2012 Ryan Braun again when he was 1-2 in the MVP bet.
Yeah, you know Ron Renneke, Doug Melvin, love to see that ball flying around Maryvale. No new precautions with the thumb, no new gear that designed to help him avoid that. I know they've probably just about run out of ideas over the last couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, they've done things to kind of limit the impact on that thumb. He's not a guy who likes a lot of padding on the bat, but they were able to find some compromises that helped him out. The problem is it's just one swing, and that thing flares up again. One inside pitch, one awkward foul ball, and he's, you know, dealing with weeks of trouble. So that's what they're hoping to avoid. And again, this procedure was something they considered doing in season last year, but with the Brewers' position where they were in first place for so much of the year, they were really nervous about doing just a procedure that there wasn't a big track record for a baseball player. So they waited. That's why they waited until after the year. So now this is, again, this is going to be the test. He gets back to regular baseball. I think that if this does give him some trouble during the season, going back to that procedure is an option. And, you hope it would work the second time. I don't know. Some of this stuff they're going to have to play by ear because there's not a lot of history of players dealing with the type of thing that he's dealing with.
Yeah, I know it makes it frustrating for everybody, him more so than anyone. I know you'll keep your eye on that as we go forward here in spring training. One of the great things about spring training are comebacks, unexpected faces in different places, and you certainly have one of those with Dontrell Willis in camp with the Brew Crew. Just what's the deal there, and what would he have to do? What would make this a successful comeback? Would winning a job on the AAA roster work, or would he have to, come all the way back and somehow open the year of the big leagues?
Well, I mean, getting back to a AAA roster would be a start, Phil, because, he's had these minor league invites for a number of years now in a row, and he hasn't been able to, sustain a season in organized baseball. And he's bounced around a lot, and he's had injuries. He's been in independent ball. He still loves the game of baseball, he said, as much as when he was 21 years old, bouncing around the field for the Florida Marlins. He says that the game is still in his blood, and he feels like he's put his body in a position to pitch at a level, at the top level, meaning making the major league club. He'd be a bullpen option for the Brewers. There are opportunities for lefties in this organization. They have a really good one in Will Smith. They did sign Neil Kotz, but, he's an older guy, and Dontrell is going to get a fair look. And that's one thing Doug Melvin, if Doug Melvin tells you you're going to get a fair shot with the team, he's going to give you a fair shot. And that's what Dontrell Willis says, partly what drew him here. He sees opportunity with the Brewers. If anything, just his clubhouse presence is great because he's human caffeine. You have to, guard yourself against rooting for any one player. But this guy is such a presence that, man, you want him to be around. So he's really already making a presence felt inside that clubhouse. He starts talking, and the noise level of the entire room picks up. The energy level picks up a little bit, and you like to have guys like that on your team.
Hey, human caffeine, that's you got away with words, Adam. Keep it up. And another one, you used, I don't know if this was your original or you were picking it up from somebody, but Tyler Thornburg, you refer to as the Swiss Army knife. That's
yeah.
Brewer staff. In this spring training, Ron Renneke deciding to stretch him out as a starter in case he needs another starter option. Were you surprised by that? I mean, it seemed like we've had some talk about his significance out of the bullpen early last year, and certainly he was a guy that was a top prospect as a starter before they moved him to the bullpen. But coming off the Tommy off the surgery. Was it a surprise that, they're going to look at him maybe as a swingman kind of a guy?
Well, one key clarification, he avoided Tommy John surgery. He did have one of those PRP injections, and he does have a slight, or he did last year at least, a slight UCL tear. But it was the kind of thing, after talking to Andrews, that they didn't need surgery.
Adam, I think if you play the tape back, you'll see I only said a Tommy. I don't think I finished the John because I caught myself right smack.
Oh, see, I'm not listening. I don't have my regular season ears aren't ready yet. I'm still training, Phil.
Okay, yeah, that's okay. I got as far as Tommy, and then I thought, no, I better stop with just the injury.
Well, the point is that he's rehabbing. He is coming back from a season that he mostly spent on the DL. And that does make it somewhat surprising to stretch him out, a little more challenging to stretch a guy who's coming back from an injury like he is. But listen, it makes some sense because you can always back off if you don't need him in a longer role, whether it's starting or longer lead. You can't really go the other direction once you have a guy, you prepare him in spring as a one-inning guy. So they're just trying to give themselves some options. And he's the kind of guy who's proven that he can be successful in every role. And I think what's different about him is we've seen guys bounce between roles in the big leagues. I mean, Carlos Villanueva has had a nice major league career, for example, as a starter and a bullpen guy. But the difference with Thornburg is that last year he pitched himself into seventh, eighth inning spots, where he was basically a setup man and he was lights out in April. And that's a little bit more rare, I think, to have success as a starting pitcher, a long man, and a setup guy. So they have lots of different options with him. Number one is get him to the season healthy and 100%. And I think so far they're really encouraged about the way he looks. And the other guy, you know, you can't mention Thornburg in this camp and not mention Jim Henderson, who was ticketed to be their closer at the start of last year. He did have shoulder surgery eventually, and he's coming back. Also looks really good in some of these early sessions. He's extremely encouraged by what's going on with his arm. And if those two guys are options, then this bullpen looks completely different. And Phil, you and I, we've talked about this winter on these podcasts about how they have lots of bullpen questions. Well, two of those could be answered in a big way if you get some contributions from the likes of Thornburg and Henderson. Those are big arms, power guys that could, you know, pitch for you in a significant role. So far, encouraging. But again, like, just like the Ryan Braun thing, this is very early in camp, so all this optimism needs to be tempered because there are lots of hurdles yet to clear before we get to opening day.
Well, this time of the spring is kind of a time to look at those arms and just kind of wondering, young guys, non-roster guys, other than the guys coming back from injury, anybody kind of had coaches walking away saying, "God, he looked good today."
Well, he's not a young guy, but he is a non-roster guy. But and I'll tell you, Chris Perez has a shot to make this club. Has closing experience, which the Brewers need. They're still, you know, that Papelbon stuff, the K-Rod stuff. You know, both of those guys still, you know, somewhat available. And Brewers certainly in the mix for either player. But if they don't go that direction, Chris Perez would become a little sleeper to play a big role for this pen. And they like the way he looks. The ball's coming out of his hand real easy, they say, in a lot of these early workouts. So I would put him, of the non-roster guys, as somebody who stood out. As far as their younger players, they've actually got some pitching prospects that they really like. The Brewers will have a really some solid pitchers, especially at the Double-A level. And a lot of those guys are in camp for the first time. And it's names people aren't going to know right now. But one of them I like, I talked to Hobbs Johnson, which is a great baseball name, and I asked him where Hobbs comes from. It's a family name. I said, you know, I have to make sure that this doesn't have to do with Roy Hobbs and the Natural, since we're based in baseball and all. And he said, well, you know, I'm not named for Roy Hobbs, but after watching that movie as a kid, I did make my own baseball bat. So I like that story, and with a name like Hobbs Johnson, I mean, that guy's got to pitch in the big leagues, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We'll keep our eye out for him. And one last thing that I'm going to let you go. Looking at the Brewers site, MLB.com, I saw like an elephant going down the road. I saw Dominican outfielder Elian Herrera shoveling snow in Milwaukee. What gives with that?
Yeah. You know, one of the other writers was just giving me a hard time for writing that story today, Phil, so I appreciate you giving it some love. But Elian Herrera came up in the Dodgers system. He played A-ball in Michigan, met a nice Midwestern girl, and as so often happens, he fell in love and married her, and now he finds himself splitting his winters between Michigan and the Dominican Republic, where he still plays winter ball. So he was nice enough to share some photos of himself shoveling snow, and you know, I said I can't think of too many Dominican ball players whose off-season workouts involved snow shoveling, but that's the Elian Herrera story. He was with the Brewers a lot last year. He's off the roster now, so he's going to have to fight his way back if he wants to keep getting that big league money so he can afford to pay someone to plow his driveway if need be.
Well, maybe he'll take him out to eat some cheese curds before our next episode. Adam, thank you very much. As always, joined by Mark Sheldon, enjoying the warm Arizona sunshine. How's spring training going for you, Mark?
Well, it's been pretty good. It's been a little more nuttier in a lot of ways. We've had some drama and little controversy spring up in the last few days, but overall it's been a pretty decent camp, I think, in the early days.
Yeah, you have to take out that fire hose and put out those Matt Latos fires early out of the shoot. But before we get on to that stuff, let's talk golf. What do you say? Bubba Watson, part owner of the Reds AA team, spending time in camp. And I loved the race he proposed to Billy Hamilton, that if Hamilton would spot him 180 feet, he would race him 360 feet. Who do you think would have won if the Reds would have let Billy Hamilton race Bubba? Could he have possibly made that distance up?
I think Billy would have still won it. I'm pretty sure you could put Billy up against anybody with any advantage, and he might still win it. Bubba Watson, though, was game for it. I have a feeling, though, just as much as the Reds didn't want Billy Hamilton to go racing, Bubba Watson's people probably didn't want him risking life and limb before an important golf tournament. The Masters is coming up in a couple months. I think it's a good thing that he decided to keep the speed in check for another few months.
Yeah, probably, but I just think of the possibilities. I think you should keep working on trying to pull this off, because it could be a joint telecast of the MLB Network and the Golf Channel.
That would be good. If I get some residuals, I'll be all about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Brian Price, I was around him the other day, and he said something. He was asked about kind of the best players in baseball to build a team around. And when he got done mentioning a couple with other teams, he said, but I want to throw another one in there, Johnny Cueto. And he went off on a long soliloquy about how Cueto has emerged as maybe the best pitcher in baseball. I mean, it was a very strong endorsement. And, of course, the Cueto contract hanging in the air as he's a year away from free agency. I've heard some positive scuttlebutt that, an extension is not out of the question. Normally very, very difficult to pull one off with a guy 1 year from free agency and, a guy who's going to shoot for the moon in terms of his next contract. Would you be shocked if they extended Cueto this year?
I wouldn't be shocked, but I would be surprised, I guess, is the right way to put that, because in the past, towards the end of spring training, they pulled the stunner of stunners, and they got Joey Votto for over $200 million and a 10-year extension, and you didn't think that was going to happen. And last year they signed, even though it was early in camp, they signed Homer Bailey to a $100 million contract. So you never want to say never, although there hasn't been really a lot of movement upon last check since we've been out here. And I don't know how much of a distraction it'll be, but it'll be very interesting to see if they can get it done. I think it's still going to be unlikely, but I wouldn't rule it out entirely, because the Reds have a way of pulling off a surprise now and again.
You think it's just, I don't know that nationally there's a perception, the appreciation for Cueto to the level that Brian Price was describing. And I don't know if it's just, everybody knows he's a great pitcher, but I don't know if it's just because he has had the injuries and the untimely postseason injury. Does his reputation within the sport lag a little bit behind the performance he's delivered when he's been on the mound last few years?
I think it does. I think the most unfortunate thing for him is that on his limited chances of exposure on a national stage, it hasn't gone according to plan, per se. In the 2012 National League Division Series, he gets only 8 pitches against the Giants, and he has to come out with an injury. And that was after a really nice 19-game season where he really was much of the ace-like stuff that he had this past year. So that was unfortunate for him. He didn't get to pitch in the All-Star game last year because he had pitched on the Sunday before the game, so he missed out on that. And, of course, in 2013, he didn't have the greatest of games in the wild card against the Pirates. He wasn't horrible, but he was kind of a left change. Matt Latos was supposed to pitch originally, and he had to pull out of the start. And Cueto wasn't necessarily 100%, but he was good enough. He only had, the 12 starts because of the injury-shortened year, and he went out and gave it what he had, and it wasn't enough. So I think if he ever gets a chance to get on a big stage again, whether it's in an All-Star game, in a playoff game, or what have you, I think you might see something different if he's 100%.
And we've been talking about extensions with a lot of guys, and you know, Mike Leake, like Cueto, in the last year of his contract, if they're not able to get an extension with Cueto, which would clearly be the preference, do you think Leake could wind up with an extension kind of in a we're going to sign one of those guys type mentality?
I don't know if they're signing in a one of those guys. I mean, Leake isn't going to command the kind of salary, even in the area code, that Cueto would command. But at the same time, he's a very dependable pitcher who rarely misses starts, who is now able to go over 200 innings and is kind of a Bronson Arroyo-esque with his durability and his somewhat of consistency. He's not a big power guy, but he can do a lot of different things. And it'll be interesting to see. He's another guy I talked to, and he's kind of either way. He's interested in staying with the Reds if they can give him the right amount of number that he wants, right dollars. But if he has to go to the free agency, he's willing to dip his toes in that water too.
Well, as a guy that went almost directly to the big leagues, he would be a young free agent. He'd have that on his side. And I'm sure when the Reds look at him, that goes back to that dependability that, having a guy that goes out there, there's a lot of value to that. Moving on to some of those firestorms from the start of camp, Joey Votto talking about kind of referencing that he didn't think the lack of leadership was an issue, had a line to you that we don't need rah-rah. So, okay, if the Reds don't need rah-rah, what would you say they do need? I mean, they need a healthy, productive Joey Votto and Brandon Phillips coming back to form. What's at the top of your checklist to make this a good spring for the Reds?
They need to have good offense. That's the spring training checklist and the regular season need, because you could poke holes in a lot of things that happened last year, and it was very convenient, I guess, is what Joey said, that you go after the leadership question when things aren't going well, and a lot of that he felt came from external sources, not from anyone inside the team. But you can't measure the intangibles of what leadership is, you can measure the lack of offense. The Reds were near the bottom in every single category, and not just because they had guys injured, but they just didn't hit well in the guys that did play, except for Frazier and Mesoraco, who had nice years. So I think if they can show that they can hit, and Votto's 100%, and Bruce is back to 2013 form rather than 2014 form, and if Zach Cozart, Brandon Phillips, and others pick it up, I think people will feel a lot better about the Reds' chances, because right now they're kind of viewed as an underdog, or given they're not really rated in the top echelon of the division. So we'll see what happens, but I think if they can continue to pitch like they did last year, the bullpen's made some improvements at least. It looks like if that's better, then all that offense has to do is do what it has to do, and the Reds look pretty good.
How is Marlon Byrd, how has he looked upon arrival? He's not exactly a shrinking violet.
He is not. He looks good. He's in amazing shape. You wouldn't know he's 37, which is a testament to him. He's really into CrossFit and some other activities that keep him strong. And the last 2 years, he's had some of his best seasons, which is, again, remarkable for his age. So right now, he's really counting on fitting in, and he's willing to be a leader. Getting back to the leadership thing, he wants to embrace that because of his tenure in the league. And he also wants to upgrade the team any way he can in the lineup, because last year they only got like 19 homers and a 229 average combined from all their left fielders. And I think he hit in the 270s, he got on base, and he hit home runs last year at 25 homers. So I think that alone is an upgrade. And if he can do some of the other intangible stuff, that'll definitely help.
Hey, on these early workout days with pitchers throwing, a lot of fun to get around and look and see guys you might not know, see who's featuring what and who's getting the catchers talking away, buzzing about them when the bullpen's done. Who's kind of, whether they're a guy that's in the plans or a kid that might not be, or an older guy that got a non-roster invite, who are a couple of guys that really caught people's attention or out of the chute?
I think Raisel Iglesias, the Cuban pitcher, he had a live batting practice session today, and he looked pretty good. He had a slider that was moving pretty well, and I've seen a couple of his bullpen sessions that have been impressive. Michael Lorenzen, who is the number three prospect, and again a hard throwing pitcher. He looked good. J.J. Hoover, who needs to have a very good year. He had a rough year last year. I was watching him in a bullpen session the other day, and Brian Pena, his catcher, was just raving about his stuff throughout the session, and they seemed to be enjoying what he was bringing. His slider was spotting it well, and he really seemed to have a good fastball. So that seems to bode well for him if he can bring that into the regular season.
Yeah, being fun to see how all those guys shape up as we. You know, we're in that time right now when looking forward to an inter-squad game if they play them. Just get the guys on the field. Soon the games will start and we'll be looking forward to opening day, but it's going to be fun to see how the Reds shape up. Thank you very much. As always, joined by Kerry Muscat. Kerry, you enjoying this Arizona sun as much as I am?
Yes. I'm not allowed to talk about the weather when I call home to my husband, but the weather here has been just perfect.
Yeah, that's a fair point that you just kind of have to slide past those topics. But, you know, for like all Midwesterners, I know you got a little head start on it, got here early, but that SPF 30 to 230 should cover us, I think. Kerry, biggest story in camp, I think it's probably going to be the big story around the Cubs all year. You know, hopefully the players will eclipse it, but the change in manager, Joe Madden, you know, always seems to the big personality kind of carry over. What's your take on the first week of Joe Madden running a Chicago Cubs camp?
Well, I know it's much louder than it ever has been in the past. Joe likes to have music during the pregame stretch. So today it was his pick, his mix, and it included a little Bruce Springsteen, Born to Run. Usually they're just out here in the desert, and all you hear are the birds and the airplanes flying over, and that's about it. But Joe likes to get the blood pumping, and that's sort of the way we've started the day, is with a little rowdy music.
Yeah, I've been out there and heard a little Latin music. It almost looked like guys, I wasn't sure if they were stretching or they were dancing on that nicely mown grass outside the clubhouse.
No, I think it's just, I've been told that Madden might let others pick the music. We're not sure if that means players or coaches or what they're going to do, but it should be interesting.
Okay. One thing that surprised me a little bit at the start of spring, I don't know about you, but Chris Bryant, a name that's going to be as big a name as any in Arizona this spring in the Cubs camp and outside based on expectations for him. News that he will work out in the outfield as well as at third base. What's your take on that? Is that just because they like versatile players, or do you think that's is at all a judgment that, you know, maybe we're not as committed to him at third base as it had seemed?
No, I think it's more just because they like versatile players. I mean, let's say, for example, Mike Olt, you know, goes on a tear and is good to go at third base. You know, then Bryant, they start Bryant at AAA and Bryant is really hot. Well, where do you put him? You know, where do you put these guys? I think it's just a matter of let's move everybody around. Madden also wants to have Tommy La Stella, an infielder that they got from the Braves. He wants to have him play third base. The guy's never played third base in professional ball. You know, they're just trying to move people around, just to have them all exposed to different places. I don't think we'll see Brian in the outfield anytime soon, but I think it's just a matter of just making sure that guys, they have some versatile guys off the bench, and let's say Bryant, you know, is needed in the outfield. Boom, there you go.
Yeah, and certainly an outfielder's arm. I was talking to a guy who's seen him play a lot in the Arizona Fall League after the 2013 season, and he said one thing he didn't really expect was what a strong arm he has. So for all the adjectives and hyperbole about him, You know, I think this is a complete player with all sorts of tools.
Yeah, and I think they're going to have him play a lot more third than outfield, so I'm not sure it's that big a deal with the position moves.
And, you know, the one opening, it would appear, although certainly Javier Baez, the front runner, second base, Joe Madden's famous line by now that we're not in an entitlement program. You know, Arizmendi Alcantara, who played mostly center field last year, probably as versatile as anybody on the roster. Dexter Fowler has taken the regular center field job. Do you think Arizmendi would get a look in that second base derby, or is there already kind of a commitment to make him the Ben Zobrist super utility guy and move him around the field, and maybe he gets 400 at bats, but they're not at one position? Could he wind up as a regular second baseman?
I guess so. I know one of the things the Cubs said when Madden was looking at video of some of the guys on the roster was how much he liked Alcantara and how much he liked the idea of making him, using him the way he used Zobrist with the Rays. So I would think that he might move around a little bit more. On the first day of the first full squad workout, Alcantara was at second base with Baez and for now, and I think Joe wants to see him there probably a little more than the outfield. It's early. I think the mission right now is for Madden to sort of get a feel for these guys, what they can do, what they can't do, and the only way they'll know is if they put him out there in the Cactus League games.
Well, it's definitely early for hitters. The pitchers have been there throwing for about a week now, and you know, and honestly, longer than that for most of them because guys get to spring training camps so early in this generation of players. You know, and I think we know about John Lester and Jason Hamill, a lot of the guys that were around. But among the guys that hadn't or either new to the organization or first spring trainings, who kind of opened some eyes in those bullpens or had people talking about their work in those early throwing sessions?
I haven't really heard really anybody singled out too much. They started live BP on the first full workout day, and I know Madden was impressed with Arrieta, but he's one of the starters, and he's pretty much set. Justin Grimm looked real sharp on the first day, too, and he could be a key part. One guy that might be a sleeper that people don't talk about is Daniel Bard. He missed time last year after undergoing thoracic outlet syndrome, and he could kind of sneak into the bullpen a little bit if he can regain the form that he had in 2010, 2011 with the Red Sox. I know Theo, he was one of the AL leaders in terms of appearances, and his ERA was incredible, and he could slip in there too, and it might be someone to keep an eye on. But right now it's pretty early. You know, guys are just doing their side work. You know, it's a little too hard to say.
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned Daniel Bard because on our website, the Cubs page, you have an excellent feature story on kind of Daniel Bard's story and an interesting story of a guy who hit a point, he's lost, whether it's from the injury, lack of confidence, kind of at an absolute low point when he was released last year by the Texas Rangers. How did he come back? What did he do with that? I think it's a great little story.
Well, he was trying to kind of make his corrections on the mound instead of being patient, you know, and then working on the side. And part of the reason was it wasn't anything to do with what the Rangers did, but it was part of it was because his contract was up in June and he sort of had to figure out what was going on. He appeared in four games for their Class A Hickory team and got two out of 18 batters out, and that's not really very conducive to the big leagues. So what he did was he just told his agent, you know, his agent said other teams were interested, and he just told his agent, look, I'm taking the summer off. And he went, joined his father-in-law on Ragbri, which is a bicycle ride across Iowa in July, and then he and his wife went to Europe and drove around Europe for a month, which isn't a bad thing to do. It's something that not many major league players ever get to do during the summer, but for him it was just he was just able to clear his mind and actually just realize that, hey, there's a life beyond baseball, and it wasn't quite so life or death. And a lot of players, I think, tend to put that pressure on themselves. Mike Olds, perfect example, too. And Bard said he feels great. He's healthy, number one. His mind is clear, and he's around a lot of people right now that have put him in a really good comfort zone, number one being his former Red Sox minor league coach, Mike Cather, who is with him at Double-A. And Mike knows him from back then when he was really sharp, knows him now. And then Chris Bosio, the Cubs pitching coach, had worked with him in September 2013 when he signed briefly with the Cubs. So he's got kind of a, as he likes to say, a new set of eyes and an old set of eyes keeping an eye on him. And it's just really, to me, it's a really cool story. It's just, if he can come back, it would just be just really a terrific story. He's somebody that a lot of people in baseball like, and he was really effective, and it would be just a nice addition for the Cubs pen.
Yeah, and I guarantee if he has a couple of good outings once the game starts, you'll see all the Boston newspapers show up to write about a former Red Sox. One last thing, and then
we have a lot of former Red Sox people here, so you could have a Boston writer in the camp now if you wanted.
Yeah, absolutely. You're right about that. One of the last things I wanted to ask you about was Theo Epstein's mental skills program that was announced this week, and a lot of teams have had sports psychologists for a long time now, but is this the Cubs taking us to another level to announce this program with four full-time staffers? Or not full-time,
I think it's just three full-time people. But what Theo had said was that it's part of their program that they've been trying to upgrade a little bit. They weren't real happy with the way it was going before. Theo says he remembers in Boston, he just had Bob Tewksbury as his guy trying to handle everything, and that was a little tough. I give the team credit for doing this, and I also give Joe Maddon credit, because if your manager doesn't believe in something like this, it's not going to work. You're not going to be able to sell it to the players. And I think that just the combination of Theo wanting to upgrade it and Maddon believing in this type of format, or this type of assistance for the coaching, for the players, mental coaching is really key. I mean, they say the game is what's Yogi Berra saying about how much the game's 90% mental and the other half is whatever. It is a mental part of the game is really key, and this is big. And I got that quote totally screwed up, but that's okay.
Yeah, no, we all knew what you meant.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
I need to go see the coaches, too. Yeah.
Yeah, well, it could be either that, or this could just be an example of Terry being Terry, which leads
That's
us
true.
Into Manny Ramirez, newly employed member of the Cubs. How big do you think Manny Ramirez's role will be as a hitting consultant?
I think there's some kids that he worked with at AAA Iowa last year, like Chris Bryant and Javier Baez and Jorge Soler, and I think that they're hoping that Manny can kind of connect with them. Manny's very smart about hitting. There's no doubt about that. What I was impressed with was on his first day in camp, he addressed the media in the middle of the clubhouse, and if you asked him a question, he turned to look you right in the eye. And so he kind of, unfortunately, he had to spin around. It was like this 360-degree news conference because he kept going around answering the questions. But he wanted to make sure he looked you in the eye when he answered. And he said that he's talked to the players, I don't want you to make the same mistakes I did. And that's part of his message. And I think that's going to be really effective for the players, for the young players.
Yeah, absolutely. And, he had a good impact last year with Javier Baez right from the start. And, you can't have too many smart baseball people around. No doubt about that. Jerry, I appreciate it.
No, but I also think people need to remember that, Brian Harper, who is the AAA Iowa hitting coach, he deserves some credit, too. He should not be forgotten in this because he was with Javi from the very beginning of the AAA season. So Harp kind of gets lost in this because he doesn't have the 500-plus home runs that Manny does. But Harper deserves some credit for helping Javi, too.
And you would say that even if the two of you guys didn't go back to the Metrodome. But,
correct. I would, yes.
Absolutely. Thanks for listening. This has been MLB.com Extras, National League Central Edition. This is Phil Rogers. Till next time.